Yeah, they have tunnel sewer systems, like infrastructure that goes underneath. Like
it's like a thing. There's like actually people living down there. Like I think there's a show on it, right?
Yeah.
Really?
And then they'll move into it in the summer when it gets hot.
Really? Underneath the streets, yeah. Especially down by the strip. I think there's a lot of infrastructure over there.
That's gross. Imagine what that's like.
This was like by an overpass. I actually saw someone hopping a fence, and then they were going down into the...
culvert.
Yeah, culvert system thing. Yeah.
It's probably so there's like the dawn of the dead.
Anywhere you can probably find some shade, I would think, if you're going to stay here during the heat.
Yeah, especially in the summer.
So when the zombie apocalypse happens, you can say this is probably the center of everything here. Like all the weird people just came out of the ground.
Yeah,
I've heard. They've been down there breeding for decades probably.
Oh my God.
I've heard rumor that they swap back and forth between like Salt Lake and Vegas.
Because of the weather?
Because of the weather. So they'll spend like summers in Salt Lake because it's a little cooler, you know?
Mm-hmm.
A little more mountainous. You can find some more shade. And versus Vegas where it's 120.
How the hell do they get back and forth?
Greyhound, maybe? I don't know. I don't know how they do it. But I've heard that. Yeah. I've heard that they swap cities just back and forth between one and the other just to try to avoid the weather of the season.
I mean, this sounds like it'd be a really good podcast series. Just like dive into all these like random stories about like crazy things that we're all kind of interested in, but probably won't listen to it long.
I bet if I search it on my way home, there probably is one.
There probably is one, yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for stopping in.
Yeah.
It's your anniversary today, you said.
Anniversary, 37 years.
37. Yep. So people listening, you probably already know, but we have Dan and Karen Gates on.
Mm-hmm.
You're familiar with Dan's voice, and we appreciate you guys jumping on.
Appreciate you having us.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, sounds like we have lots to talk about, huh?
Yeah, we got to, if it's not just in Colorado, the Centennial State, it's...
everywhere?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is people just need to recognize where they're at and what's going on at every single level. And it's not insurmountable, but it's to the point to where you wonder just how bad it can get.
Mm-hmm.
And, we keep... try not to be the doom and gloom deliverers every time you turn around. But I tell you what, when you piss off animal rights extremists and kick them to the curb, they rearm and they retool, they refund. And it's a lot easier for them to do that than it is our community typically. So,
I think it's just how you frame it, right? So I don't know that it's doom and gloom per se as it is as much as you just have to be educated and aware of it, of like what's coming down the pipeline. And I mean, I guess you could look at it as doom and gloom because in a lot of ways for hunters and fishers and anglers and trappers, it is.
Yeah.
But it's also just, you just have to be aware of it, right? And working towards something to protect it.
You stay steadfast. And I always end a lot of my presentations, stay the course and aim small, miss small. But, stay the course in this, in this landscape is imperative.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
can we go back? We haven't had you on the podcast since 127.
No.
Haven't had a chance to like visit post, like kind of how that went and transpired and how you were feeling out. That was one thing when I knew we were going to have you in today, I wanted to ask you what was that like? Like, what was the feeling like? What was the kind of both the good and the bad, like, so what was the fallout? What was also just like the feeling and the vibe of post essentially like winning in that regard?
I think when it was going on, I'll let Karen say it, but the election night, we were watching stuff and
did you guys stay up and watch pretty close? I could imagine that was pretty intense. I mean, it was intense for all. We were all, I know Brady,
we had a group chat, me, Trail, and Chris Neville, and we were literally constantly pulling our phone down, refreshing. I was looking at 127 more than the presidential stuff.
It was very stressful.
What did you say?
I had a good feeling we were going to win. I just, because of all the groundwork that had been put forth, so I had a good feeling, but it was very nerve-wracking until the numbers really started coming in and you could start adding it up that we were going to win. But we were also following two others in Denver that he sat on issue committee for that were very detrimental to fur ban.
Yeah, the ordinance 308 and 309. Yeah.
Slaughterhouse. And we won those two.
Mm-hmm.
So it was awesome.
She kept saying, well, you could be a little bit more happier. I'm like, until they count Denver and Boulder, I'm not happy about anything.
Right. Yeah, you just don't know yet. Yeah.
And another hour would go by and it would stay at 55, 45, or 56 44 or whatever, and she's like, well, you could show some enthusiasm. and I'm like, I don't want to get out of my league here. But we started getting text messages and phone calls about 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, thinking, I think this is a reality. I think this is something that could really happen. And but I still wasn't, I was, for sure. You know, until the horse crosses the finish line, yeah. You know, it's not over.
Did you think, or did anyone think it would probably be the margin it was, or think it'd be a lot closer?
In all reality, I think that we probably thought it was going to be closer. But it shows that our campaign, that the message from the entire community that was spread out, and between the signs and the social media stuff and the billboards and the advertisements and everything that was going on, you know, following the science was easy for the target audience, that general voter on the front range, to be able to comprehend, especially after 114 on the wolf issue in 2020. Mm-hmm. And the wolves were in the news about every single damn day, if not week. And, that helped us because we kept talking about science-based wildlife management. Mm-hmm. But in all reality, I thought that if we'd have won 53 or 52 or 51, that we'd have been lucky. Mm-hmm. But 55-45 in a wildlife ballot initiative is a landslide.
Yeah.
Now, immediately thereafter, the antis came out and said, oh, this is a mandate for the legislature and the commission to be able to do something because X amount of people came out and voted for this. But they weren't saying that on the wolf issue when they kept saying they kept saying you know, you need to follow the will of the people, the vote of the people, and I'm thinking, okay, that's for this but not on for that.
It's all how you spin it, right?
Yeah, exactly. And they're really good at how they spin it.
Yeah, that's their whole business is spinning,
lie and deceive,
spinning words.
Yeah.
What did I was curious is like what do you think we learned as far as, and you've been through the whole wolf thing.
Yep.
And then, you know, we carried this through the finish line. You did, I should say.
No, we did. Yeah. And I joke about this. And I was the idiot at the front of the line. But we had a hell of a team around the state, around the region, and around the country, because we wouldn't have been able to pull it off if we didn't carry the message like what we did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you think we learned as far as messaging and...
I think the biggest thing, honestly, is you look back in hindsight, and it's tell the truth,
mm-hmm.
and state the facts, give the data and the statistics, and rely on the experts. Mm-hmm. And while I don't consider politicians to be experts, we have some good politicians, but I do consider most game agencies to be experts, and the programs within those game agencies to be the best level of expertise that we've got. And if we don't believe that, then how are we going to continually support and stand up what we've got in sustainable, you know, some sort of sustainable mentality?
Right.
And I think that convincing the people on our side that you might have differences because your kid didn't draw a tag, or maybe you haven't never drawn a bighorn sheep, or you don't like the elk populations in this region, no matter what state it is, or that you don't particularly care for the way that some game agency does something, would you rather have them doing it, or would you rather have the voter doing it, or would you rather have the commission doing it, or would you rather have the target audience doing it, the voter? Mm-hmm. I'd rather have the experts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At least then you have an idea that it's supposed to be doing something right.
Right.
And but I think the biggest thing is just making sure that people fully understand that if we don't support agencies themselves, who would you rather do it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like what you said. Tell the truth. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's well said. Probably as simplistic as it can be stated and captures it pretty much completely. Do you know? I mean, if you tell the truth in your messaging, and if you really believe what we believe, you simply put that out as it is and it exists and as a truth. And I think it resonates with people. And I think it showed up in the vote, in the popular vote.
Yeah.
Do you have a sense of, I don't know if you can answer this question, but I would assume since then you've probably talked to people at CPW. Was like a collective sigh of relief? Do you feel like from them,
Yeah, tremendously. It's funny because, and any of those guys that would listen to this, and they would know who I'm talking
about. Who they are, yeah.
But a tremendous sigh of relief, but at the same time, maybe from upper level leadership, recognizing that that wasn't the end,
mm-hmm.
because there's ulterior motives and higher powers that want agenda driven tactics to be able to be imposed. And that comes from the governor's office and down through the Department of Natural Resources, straight to the director of Colorado Parks and Wildlife, Jeff Davis.
Mm-hmm.
And so as soon as you mix politics in with that stuff, they know that whatever happens is going to create a tougher road to toe for them, mm-hmm. because people's different ideologies. And you're going to do this and you're going to do that. And I'm getting to the point now to where, you know, our governor has roughly 19 months left and he's termed out. But you can see it through so many different levels that took place during the campaign and in the 5.5 years prior to the campaign, and specifically what's going to happen over the course of the next 19 or 20 months.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't just all have to deal with science, but it's our job to be able to turn around and continually remind people and prop that up.
Mm-hmm.
There's statutes, there's regulations, there's management plans, there's protocols, there's models,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think that the average person really gives a damn what Jared Polis thinks about things when it comes to wildlife management, because he's not a wildlife biologist.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I want to trust the 350 science-based experts within our agency, mm-hmm. and I think that politicians should get their damn nose out of it and be able to turn around and support that.
Yeah. I know. I mean, this is one of the things I really liked. It was just like, it felt like for a hot minute, the entire like sportsman community came together. Like
yeah.
that mm-hmm. next day after that had like come through, it felt really neat. Like it felt like this unified feeling among sportsmen. And like, if you go back and you look at social media, and you kind of follow along in the business that we do, like we do so much in-house bickering and, you know, we get real tribal with this or that.
Oh yeah.
It felt really good just to see how united we could be. And it was fun to like celebrate that together. Mm-hmm. And then, I think, and this is probably leading into like the rest of the discussion, but I think we collectively have this like, oh, we did it. Now, you know, let's go hunting. And like you talked about this morning.
Yeah.
First thing I did when I walked in, because we've been out of town for the last 10 days, we've been hunting. But I think one of the first conversations I had with Lorenzo when he came in was I was like, hey, what'd you draw in Utah? Do you know what I mean? We weren't talking, you know, we weren't talking policy or science-based wildlife management. I mean, we were talking about, hey, what did you draw and what are you looking forward to this fall? But I think collectively we celebrated that and that was awesome. But then we have this tendency to just like, yeah, put it in the rear view and we move on and we start looking towards the fall and the thing that we really love to do.
You know, Trail, that's the hardest thing for us to be able to do is to continue to keep the enthusiasm mm-hmm. and the opportunistic momentum.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That people need to understand that the antis are fighting 365 days a year at multiple levels for multiple species and multiple methods of take.
Mm-hmm.
And for us to be able to turn around and keep that, this is not why we signed up for what we're doing. We signed up for part of it. But if the average person realized what Howl for Wildlife was doing and what CRWM was doing or what Wild Sheep was doing or what, you know, National Wildlife Federation or the Congressional Sportsman's Foundation or Sportsman's Alliance, you name them, if they found out what they were actually trying to do to be able to sustain this, so you can come back and say, what did you draw?
What did you draw?
You know, yeah. I mean, that's what it is.
Yeah.
This is a fight that is going to continue, and mm-hmm. it's going to continue at such a remarkable pace, because losing breeds optimism for our enemy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you think it would be downtrodden. It would think it would be, I mean, Wayne Pacelli said during the campaign that they were up against the most formidable, well-funded, strategic opposition in 30 years. That was us. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we kicked the crap out of them. So what do? They immediately come back and they rearm and they refund and they retool and they rehire and then they spread their wings to go to different states and different organizations, Center for Biological Diversity, Wild Earth Guardians, you know, you name it, they're involved. And at this point in time, are we going to say that we won the Super Bowl and we're just going to go back and now we want to be the Cleveland Browns again? No. No disrespect to the Cleveland Browns, but...
Yeah, and that's the hard part, right? Because it's relentless.
Yeah, they're always attacking, and they're going to come back with, like you said, tenfold.
Yeah.
Like they're probably upset, so they have kicked their tail, and they're well more organized than we are, always.
They're more optimistic.
More optimistic.
I never had And just in some of the last banquets and fundraisers and stuff we've been a part of, the amount of acknowledgments that I and CRWM acquired since January were organizations wanted us to go to their event, their fundraiser, and be recognized on stage.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
But that incites this level of we need to kill him mentality from the opposition.
It elevates who you are and what you represent even that much more, and the influence that perhaps you hold, you know, and the message that you're able to capture and spread among and kind of organize. It's like, I mean, we talked about it before when you were here, but we've always kind of struggled, I think, as far as like being able to identify an individual, you know, like have some leadership, right? Like we all kind of have ideas, and we kind of a little bit, we know what to do maybe here and there. We try to spread like, hey, you know, comment here and send emails to this person or make phone calls. But it felt like through this, like you really established yourself as a voice and as a leadership. And so, yeah, going through and winning that, I'm sure it just put you that much further up on their totem pole. And it's oh, here's an individual we really have to hone in on and figure out and try to figure out how to exploit and get around and work the message in a way that we can kind of meet our goals.
Yeah. And I think at this point in time, they're not dysfunctional.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this last Parks and Wildlife Commission meeting that was a couple of weeks ago, and then the one in March, I'm the topic of discussion.
Yeah.
I mean, my name is mentioned dozens, if not more than dozens of times by testifiers
on both
that
sides.
Are up there, mostly on their side. Mm. Now, I was recognized for Conservationist of the Year in March.
Very cool.
And which was cool. But at the same time, it was almost Trump-like. And I do not want to compare myself to Trump. But when I went up, half the room sat down and half the room stood up. It was like the State of the Union address or something. Yeah. And then there was criticism given to the agency because I was selected as Conservationist of the Year. Well, I wasn't selected by the agency. I was selected by my peers of 26 different organizations that nominated me to put me in the running for the Colorado Wildlife Council Conservationist of the Year.
Right.
But the antis didn't give a crap how or when or who or where. It's the fact that I got anything in recognition from the conservation community, not the animal extremist community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you hear them get up, I'm a conservationist. Really?
Sure.
What have you done for conservation?
Right.
You know, besides turn around and trying to stop conservation.
Yeah.
And so to see that sort of hate and to see that sort of displeasure and despise for the cause, the sportsman community needs to get our crap together because it's not about one issue. Mountain lions and bobcats was the low-hanging fruit temporarily. But now they're going to come back. Pro Animal Future is actually having this week they're actually having a campaign fundraiser deal to start their efforts for the 2026 ballot initiative again.
Really?
How can we stop that from going to a ballot, though, again? Is there ways to prevent those?
Just the same thing that we did before and go through the flipping money-raising scheme and go through the title board and the Secretary of State and the Supreme Court and start the process all over. 26 states have this ballot process in place to where anybody, and I talked about it before, anybody could turn around and say, I don't want anybody to wear orange hats. And if you get enough signatures to put it on the ballot, okay, well, you don't wear orange hats. Or I don't want anybody to have pit bulls or walk my labradoodle after dark. I mean, those are stupid statements, but that's how stupid some of the stuff
is.
If you saw some of the ballot initiatives that people want, you'd like, and they actually have enough time and effort and money to try to do that. The ultimate goal is to put Colorado into an animal sanctuary state, like what they want to do in Oregon, and in some capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some other things that we'll talk about during this conversation that are starting to surface, and they're going through the Legislative Council and eventually the title board to do so. But you look at what New Mexico has done, Arizona, Nevada. You know, I was talking to Shane Rogers, the commission chair, there at the Nevada Bighorn Society. And you just look and go, you think that they're lunatics, but there's so many of them that it has to be a cult. It can't be just one lunatic standing on the side of the road. It's a bunch of them. And I think we're in a position now to where we have to figure out a way to continue the momentum, keep the enthusiasm, keep the funding going, because without the funding, there is no fight. And those are other things we'll end up talking about, not just for here, but every other state as well.
How quickly did you, so after that, that vote, that process, how quickly did you start hearing kind of murmuring of what was next for them?
And two weeks.
Really?
Yeah.
2 weeks, really.
Two weeks. We went to the Colorado Parks and Wildlife Commission meeting in Lamar, Colorado, and they were voting on the East Slope Mountain Land Management Plan. And I said early on that if we won on November 5th, that we would win 2 weeks later, and if we lost, we would lose. That was the catapult to the get to the point. We won unanimously 2 weeks after that with the East Slope Mountain Land Management Plan. And then roughly 2 weeks after that, you started hearing the murmuring of things that the legislature was probably going to undertake in some capacity. And there was a bill that was implemented, HB, House Bill 1258, that would have essentially, it was done by the same people, the same organizations within the same mindset. And they went to Representative Tammy Story and got her to run a bill. And we went and testified right after that commission meeting in March. I think it was the 6th of March. And we got a vote of 10-3 to kick that out of committee. And the reason that that was an important component of all of this concept, because some of that mentality was to degrade and erode Colorado Parks and Wildlife's ability to do just exactly what we've been talking about. And the language that was in there, instead of saying shall utilize, they would have changed that from Colorado Parks and Wildlife to may authorize.
Right.
Okay, to me, that's the difference between a stop sign and a yield sign.
Right.
You don't have to, but you need to. You should or you won't. And I think that those are components that, now, and keep in mind, in that particular committee, there was 8 Democrats and 5 Republicans, and we won 10-3. Now, to the average guy that never even saw that go through the committee, says, oh, well, the big deal. No, it was such a big deal because it would have opened up another 2.5 months of conversations through different committees in each chamber, the House and the Senate, to turn around and come back and do amendments and then add to this and subtract off of that, which then would have caused more consternation from the sportsmen and the sportswomen, because they're like, do we want this or do we not want this? I don't agree with that, but I do agree with this. We're not sure how this would work, but the ultimate goal was to stop Colorado Parks and Wildlife. And now we've got a ballot initiative that we're facing right now that has a lot of the similar language, and that they're going to try to pull out all the stops. And for the next 19 months, like I mentioned, we've got an election this year, which only has to do with taxes. And then we've got one more legislative session. We've got 3 more commission appointments this year and next year through the last 18 months of the governor's term. And then we've got the big election next year, which will likely have several ballot initiatives and a new governor's election with multiple other elections throughout the state.
Big year.
Big year. Next year, 2026 will be the trying moment of what Colorado can continue to be or what it will eventually be.
More so than ever before.
Yeah, I said this jokingly with you and Lorenzo, but I mean, the 2026 and what's on the docket has the ability to make Proposition 127 look like a Girl Scout cookie sale. I mean, that's how bad it is.
Really?
Yeah. If you read Initiative 82, which is the Colorado Wildlife Biodiversity Protection Act, it will get rid of Colorado Parks and Wildlife. Essentially, it will defund and disband Colorado Parks and Wildlife, and the commission that is there now will be gone. As much as I hate the conversation that goes on with that commission, the new commission that would be created would be so disruptive to anything science-based, wildlife management, anything consumptive. This commission could determine what was a keystone species and go on to private or public land and decide how that land should and will be managed. People think that that's a far cry, but they never thought we'd be voting on wolves, and they never thought we'd be voting on mountain lions either. They never thought we'd lose trapping or bear hunting back in the 90s either. This, if it goes through and gets to that point, it'll be the biggest fight that the Western United States has ever had to do on any wildlife
management. Gosh. And And that's 082, you said?
Initiative 82. Yeah.
Sorry, I'm taking a couple seconds to write this down because this is very important to cover this part right here as something else later. Because
so what's the process? Where is it at?
And so it's gone through legislative council, and legislative council then reviews all of the components of the ballot initiative itself. And then they give suggestions and recommendations. Now, nobody has to adhere to that, but they give suggestions and recommendations, and they go through this back and forth conversation. You should do this, and duly noted, and you should do that. Okay, we're not going to do that. You should do this. Yeah, we're modifying that. So they've had two of those. They started out with Initiative 52, and then they withdrew it. Now they're at Initiative 82. They've gone through that process.
Man, it moves so quick. Like, yeah. We're only in May.
Yeah, exactly.
This is just, you know, I mean, yes.
Yeah, you know, and that's the hardest thing is that people, because you, the only time you can do ballot initiatives to that level outside of taxes is on even years. So you went 24, then they're going to come back in 26. One of the closing statements that the proponents said to legislative council was, how many times can we come back here? And they said, as many times as you need to. They said, okay. So they have until March of 26 before they have to be completely through the title board and have a title. So they've gotten from now until March of 26 to revise and adapt and modify whatever they want to do as many times as they want. Now, the good thing is we don't have a legislature going on until January of next year through May of next year. But with this particular wildlife commission that we've got, and the legislative session, and a lot of those people going to be running for re-election in 26, mm-hmm. and new governor's candidates coming on board, there's going to be a lot of negotiating and compromising back and forth. Will you support this if we support you? Will you turn around and take this on if we fund this? I mean, that's just politics, and it's things that I don't like.
True, yeah.
But it's part of the game, and sportsmen and women typically have not been part of that game. And that's a thing that if we're going to finish the game, like they said in Young Guns, if we're going to finish the game, then we need to turn around and continue to do what we did during 14, 15 months of the campaign. Mm-hmm. And let's play hardball because mm-hmm. they're going to.
Yeah. Sure.
Wow. Man. That's a lot to think about right there.
Especially when you get back in the States and, you know, it gets 15 hours different.
Yeah, I mean, it gets so convoluted almost. You wonder, like, where do you put your time and energy? So, like, where are you putting your time and effort and energy right now? Is it in, you know, rallying sportsmen? Is it in talking and lobbying with certain individuals that may end up running, you know, to...
Combination of everything. I got, since we were here, I got... two text messages from gubernatorial candidates that said we need to sit down and have a talk.
Right. It's a lot of moving parts and pieces.
Yeah, we only been here 3 days. I mean, it's like, yeah. you know, you got Memorial Weekend coming up. There's still fundraisers and different events. But, you know, she's the brunt of so much of the backstory because we're still trying to maintain our business. Mm-hmm. We're still trying to maintain some sort of financial and intellectual sovereignty to where we can, you know, keep plugging away at some level. But mm-hmm. this is not what I or anybody else signed up for.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at the majority of the people in our organizations nationwide, you've got some people that are paid, and the majority of them are volunteers. If you look at the majority of people in the animal rights extremist organizations, they've got volunteers. But all of their mid to upper level people acquire some sort of compensation.
Paid lobbyists?
Yep.
What did you tell me earlier in the number of lobbyists?
So last year they had five during the campaign from around the country of national organizations that are not like-minded like us. We won in November, and now they've got 18.
Okay.
They went from 5 to 18. So stop and think of that.
More than doubled down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they didn't do it because they like mm-hmm. me so much. They didn't do it because, you know, they want to be mm-hmm. friends with us. I mean, you know, what's your perspective?
It is very time consuming for him. I would say he's probably been home a month if you put all the dates together since January. He is gone.
And it's not been hunting either.
He's gone to different states. He's doing meetings. And if he didn't put his energy into it, you wouldn't be effective. So he's literally doing what he needs to do. And other people are calling on to him and saying, hey, can you help me out with this? What do you think about that? Well, most generally, he has to go wherever they might be to be able to handle it and do things. So, yeah, it's kind of changed our life around of what we normally do on a regular basis. But if he doesn't move forward with it, what's going to happen?
Yeah.
Because everybody's asking him, well, can you do this? Can you do that?
I'm sure, given with the amount of effort that you've put into this and then kind of the status and the leadership that you've shown, you've probably increasingly been called upon to address other issues across other state lines. So
yes.
I would assume you probably get into a lot of discussion on public lands and public land sales.
Yeah.
You know, we hear a lot about it. We read a lot. We've had people reach out to us and say, you know, you need to talk more about this issue, this public land sale, or you need to talk about this issue in Oregon. You know, and it's how do you stay focused? Are you trying to stay focused in Colorado?
I think so. And that's a good question because, you know, we had a tremendous amount of gun issues that happened in Colorado this year, which was hard. I mean, we commented, we provided input, we tried to provide, and I say we, the Colorado Wildlife Conservation Project that I'm a vice chair of, it's 26 organizations and a bunch of professional members. We formulated that organization back in, it's a coalition, back in 2022, 5 years after we'd already done CRWM. And so you've got expertise at different levels that should be able to cover the basis on some of those topics that you mentioned and others because of the boots on the ground experience that they've got in their wheelhouse or their mission, or maybe it's their grants or funding, or maybe it's their connectivity in Washington. And so it's easy to ride the coattails of some of those groups like TRCP or RMEF or NWTF or Rocky Mountain Bighorn Society or whatever it might be, because everybody's got their own issue. But going back to what we did during the campaign is, not only does everybody have their own issue, but we all have a issue, if not multiple issues. And I think that, you know, the phrase that we coined over and over and over, I'm a sportsman, that still resonates. But we have to beat people's brains in to the point where when they say, oh, yeah, I'm a bow hunter. Okay, you just divided yourself from the rifle hunter. True. Because how many rifle hunters do you know that are actually bow hunters and vice versa? Now, there's some straight line dedicated archery hunters, but there's straight line dedicated bass fishermen too. But I don't want the bass fishermen going against the trout fishermen.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there was a petition in our state to turn around and get rid of live bait. Minnows, grasshoppers, crickets, salmon eggs, worms. Well, I don't do a lot of fishing because I'm doing all this crap. But if we're going to turn around and let the bait guys go against the fly guys, let go against the spinnerbait guys, that's dividing and conquering us intentionally from somebody else. We don't have to do that ourselves. And I think the same thing goes into, I don't want to get into a pissing contest with RMEF. They're great allies. They're great advocates. They were supporters of the campaign. Well, how couldn't they be? Safari Club International, we got a great relationship. They're running another raffle for us this year. You know, TRCP, BHA, NWF, CWF, I mean, for those that don't know, National Wildlife Federation, Colorado Wildlife Federation, Keep Route Wild, which is a more singularized group in Colorado up around Steamboat. I don't want to get into a pissing contest with any of them, but the antis want us to be at each other's throats.
Sure. Yeah.
Because then they find a chink in the armor. They can capitalize on something. They can divide us over here, and we're not so powerful. And I think for me to stay focused, for CRWM to stay focused, we need to stay in our wheelhouse. And people have come out over and over and over, and we've had to start dealing in the wolf issue a little bit while we're dealing with all this other stuff. There's a group called Smart Wolf Policy, and you guys are probably seeing that stuff out there, and they want to turn around and try to have a ballot initiative to stop the introduction, or they call importation, of wolves for November of 2026, to stop the importation and make it final by December 31st of 2026. We're opposed to it. People would say, why? It's because it's not the right time and it's not the right message. And if you got to raise $5 million for that, we're going to get attacked on all this other crap. We can't raise $10 to $15 million. So that 26 organization group and 18 cattlemen and agriculture groups in 29 different counties have come out in opposition to that particular ballot initiative. It's not gaining much traction. They needed to be able to turn around and go and get the signatures just like anybody else. But to stay focused, our focus is on what we can accomplish and what we need to do, and why worry about something that's going to happen inevitably when Governor Polis is out and Colorado Parks and Wildlife is not going to put more wolves on the ground when he's done.
Mm-hmm.
So why spend millions of dollars to get it on the ballot for something that's going to happen naturally when we're already going to meet the thresholds and objectives? And I'm not a road scholar or a rocket scientist on this, but I spent 18 months on the stakeholder advisory group, was appointed to that for wolf introduction. I know a little bit more about wolf introduction than the guys are trying to do this smart wolf policy.
Mm-hmm.
They think that that's the route to go. All of those communities, counties, and other organizations and the ag industry doesn't think so. We have to stay focused. We got to stay the course. If we don't stay the course, we will not be victorious. And I'm convinced, not just in Colorado, but I think in any state, we can't handle three or four ballot initiatives going after wildlife and habitat and conservation and methods of take and agriculture. The money's not there, and the voter mentality's not there either.
Yeah. You wondered if you...
Want to go back to New Zealand?
Yeah, it was pretty incredible. Yeah, you almost wonder. I mean, the phrase that popped into my head as you were talking is just like voter fatigue. You wonder at what point people just quit caring. Like, they just get sick of it, and you know what I mean? Like, scared, fatigue, yeah, of everything constantly being just, you know, up in the air. And, I mean, basically just quit kind of checking out. You know, like, yeah, I'll vote for whatever, you know,
especially, it just keeps especially coming, keeps when people coming. Don't understand this crap about this, like this Colorado Wildlife Biodiversity Protection Act. First of all, and I've asked people this, what is biodiversity?
Yeah, give it. Yeah.
You know, what is that? I mean, if I asked, you know, a guy at the coffee shop who had camo on, hey, what do you think about that Biodiversity Act? I mean, you know, what do you think about the Ecosystem Act? You know, they don't have a clue because it's out of their wheelhouse for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
We have this, maybe this opinion, or we got this, the idea, the facade of what the idea is on some periphery of somebody's intellect. But the average person doesn't know. Mm-hmm. But when you start reading 19 pages in that Biodiversity Protection Act and you see what it is, the average person would go, holy crap. Well, this would pretty much upend every single thing that we've ever done in our lives when it came to consumption. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, keep in mind, the title board is where you have to convince the people, because that's all they're going to read besides the small paragraph, or maybe it's a page and a half, but they're going to read the title.
Yeah.
You know, do I want Brady Miller to wear orange hats? Yes or no? Okay, Now, there might be a 7-page dissertation below that, but nobody's going to read that.
Yeah.
So do I want protection of biodiversity?
Yeah. Right.
Turn around and check that box. Even though it says in there, I won't ever be able to kill a mouse and I won't be able to eat cheese and I can't have honeybees and go to rodeos.
Yeah, that's literally what I was telling Trail.
Is it? Are we at that level?
Yeah, that's the level.
Because I think it's something I think you sent us an email a while ago, and I was reading it before this podcast. Yes. And it's like, you read that little top part like you're saying, and I was like, I don't really understand exactly what this is about without getting into it. But like you said, it sounds kind of like a good thing in a way when you read, until you dive in further, then you're like, okay, this is totally effed up. Mm-hmm. Like, this can't be a thing. But like general person reading it, like you said, just, oh yeah, I want that.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
That's scary because like it can be easy as that. And that's their opinion, because they don't have time. No one has time anymore. That's why we have social media, because we scroll all the time. So who's going to have time to read a big document? They just want to read the snippets. And if the snippets agree to what they're thinking and they don't know what's happening, they're just going to be like, oh yeah.
If you punch up, maybe it's different right now, but when Initiative 52 first came out, which is now Initiative 82, when it first came out, if you asked AI to give you a technical or legal dissertation of Initiative 52 on AI, it was like 4.5 pages. I'm thinking, well, who the hell is going to read even the AI version of it?
Yeah.
And those are things that...
Did you do that?
Yeah.
Maybe Dan used an AI.
What did it kick out?
It kicked out a fairly good synopsis and an overview, only if you understood the sideboards and the boundaries of what science-based wildlife management or agriculture and habitat protection is. Otherwise...
Did you get a feeling of whether it was skewed one way or the other?
No, it was pretty benign, pretty generalized. But there again, the average person isn't going to read any of that at all. The average person is going to turn around and go, "Yeah, that's my kid's fifth grade. He's been talking about biodiversity. I should check that off."
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, and the scary thing is, unless we're out there in the forefront. Talking about these ballot initiatives, talk about these pieces of legislation. The average consumer, whether they're pro-hunting or not, doesn't understand the ramifications of any of that because they don't read into it. Mm-hmm. Doesn't affect them. Mm-hmm. They don't pay attention to it. That's why it was so remarkable about what we were able to do last year, because we hit such a significant amount of the target audience.
Yeah,
I mean, she filtered phone calls and emails beyond epic proportions, to the point to where, I mean, you know, we're a two-person unit here, but we had a hell of a team. But she'd come home and she said, "You want to see this crap? You want to see what I got here? You want to see this?"
It was like
Christmas morning every day.
Oh, it doesn't matter what time of day it is, what day of the week it is. You're just, he's inundated with requests and then people saying certain things that's going against what. So it was hard. He had to keep everybody corralled, and that was hard because everybody kind of wanted to branch out on their own and come up with different ideas, but you had to have the same message
it's a special skill.
Yeah. Yes.
So yeah, it's a singular focus, which is hard to do. I mean, I brought it up earlier, but there's so many different topics and issues that are going on, and I'm sure that you're being called into all of them.
Well,
it's hard to maintain, I'm sure, to just keep a singular point of view and not really point of view, but like a trajectory of like, this is ultimately the direction we need to take this thing.
The biggest thing about what we did last year was we were able to corral a consistent, solid, straightforward message.
Mm-hmm.
And when people went off the rails, I'm a horse's ass enough that I would turn around and show up on their doorstep, or I would meet him somewhere.
Hmm.
Not to kick the crap out of him or anything, but just say, look, you can't circumvent, you can't flank what we're doing. And the reason that we were so successful is because everybody saw why we should be where we were at.
Yeah.
Now, there were some national outliers. I won't give them credit, and I won't turn around and put them off. But those type of things cannot continue if we're going to continue to be victorious. You have to have a consistent message, and the consistent message is what guides the general public, because then everybody's on the same page. You know why the antis on these particular issues lost? We were consistent, and our enemies weren't. Our enemies said something one day, 2 weeks later, they said something else, and I was the target, then they went after somebody else, then they went after the bighorn sheep hunters, then they went after the elk hunters, then everybody else started turning around and looking around going, holy crap, Gates has been talking about this, and now they're actually saying it themselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If they'd have stayed consistent, which they're likely to turn around and modify and alter their attacks in the future, but what they're going to do, and you mark my word, if they turn around and try to run a ballot initiative themselves, the cats aren't trophies, people. They're going to turn around and go after hounds only, and they're going to keep lion hunting. Hmm. You watch. They'll get rid of hounds, period. Yeah. Because they know that 85 to 90% of the total harvest is going to be taken off.
Yeah, so they're slowly trying to get little wins here and there.
Yeah, they figured out what didn't work, so let's do this. On the fur ban, you watch. I guarantee they're going to turn around and go strictly after fur, and they're going to exempt cowboy hats, fishing lures, and Native American crafts. Because that's why they lost, because their message was not consistent. Ours was, because it was broad-based on everything.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to turn around and modify. We have to modify. But the biggest thing is you just hope that there's enough voters that are left that remember what they voted on. And when we did thank you commercials and thank you spots afterwards, we did thank you commercials for a month on network television saying thanks for voting no on 127.
Mm.
You supported science-based wildlife management. Nobody expected that.
TV
Nobody
owners knew. Didn't expect that.
No, the network television guys said, who the
hell? They've never seen that before. Wow.
They're like, you want to do what?
Yeah.
Look how nice hunters are.
Yeah. They are awesome. Like,
we appreciate it.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, so, I mean, it's funny how things play out and you look at things in hindsight, but the antis are looking at things in hindsight too.
Sure. Everybody's learning.
Yep.
Yeah, everybody's kind of developing their...
Adapt,
their,
modify.
Yeah, and move forward. Yeah, yeah. Approach. So the one that I think, this 08-08-2.
Yeah.
I keep saying O. It's probably just 82, right?
It's just 82.
82. That one sounds like the Holy Grail, huh? Like the... It sounds like the worst of the worst.
Yeah, if you...
Sounds pretty terrifying.
So the first language that they submitted is 9 pages.
Okay.
For the title.
Okay.
Now it incorporates all the other stuff that goes into it. But when it says ensure the continuity of wildlife protections in the event that existing conservation agencies, such as Colorado Parks and Wildlife, are defunded, disbanded, or rendered operationally non-functional. Okay, you don't put that in there unless that's what your plan of action is.
Yeah.
So that should be the first and foremost thing for people to realize. What do you mean in case? Why would we be in case?
Yeah.
Who would make you the overseers of this? If you look at what has happened over the course of the last 15, 18 months for a variety of different things pertaining to funding, pertaining to gun regulations. Colorado Parks and Wildlife is now going to be the overseer of Senate Bill 003 to do the licensing and the permitting of guns under this gun ban. Colorado Parks and Wildlife has no business doing that, but the legislature gave them the power to do so. When they don't have the ability to do it, that's going to create more dysfunction. That's going to create more displeasure from non-sporting people, gun owners, to an agency that says they're screwing the system and they're messing with my Second Amendment rights. Now we need to turn around and disband and defund these guys over here. That goes into this. You watch next legislative session. Some of this stuff will play out, and they'll turn around, in my mind, they'll do some things commission-wise, they'll do some things legislatively, and then when they go to title board on this Initiative 82, which it'll be whatever the hell they give a number to, they'll say, we don't need to do this, this, and this anymore because the legislature and the commission has already done that. So it'll be easier for the people to pass because this really has to do with biodiversity, which nobody still can define.
Right.
That's interpretation.
Stuff's all so scary.
You want to hunt Colorado this year?
Just a big headache, like, to try to dive in there and read all this stuff. Like I said, the first email you send me with the PDF document, it's like, it's so confusing when you start reading it and how they word things, how they trick you. And
where are we at as far as what people can do at this point?
Move.
move to action.
Move to action. We see a whole lot of people that are moving. A hell of a lot.
Moving out of state.
Moving out of state.
Yeah.
And not just on the gun side. Sure. They're just like, you know, I'm talking agriculture guys.
Oh, yeah.
I'm talking guys that have 50, 60,000 acres that were forced out, that were appointed in the political positions and then strangled to death to where they had to pack their whole operation out. The gun industry. We know 15 or 20 different gun shop owners that have said, screw it. I'm closing down or I'm moving out of state.
Wow.
That's just since this year.
In your area, that you know of?
Mm-hmm. And other ones are sitting there going, I don't know what we can do because we cannot comply. We talked about it earlier. Mm-hmm. Cannot comply with the state permit regulations. We cannot comply. So we had 10 employees. Now we got 3. We can't turn around and run the shop with three people.
Mm-hmm.
Other places that everything from the gun show side of it to the taxes, to the background checks, to the detachable magazines, you name it. I mean, there was 5 or 6 gun bills that turned around and came through that it will affect us as a federal firearms license holder without a store. It'll affect us as concealed carry individuals because we'll have to now go get renewed through a 12-hour class to be able to turn around and do what we've been doing for the last forever. 45 years.
Mm-hmm.
The permitting side of things, the state permit goes on top of the federal permit, and there's more restrictive requirements on the state side than there is on the federal side, even though you have a federal firearms license, but now the state Department of Revenue has peace officer status to where they can come in any store at any particular time to not regulate the federal side, regulate the state side mm-hmm. with an agency or a division that has not yet been created. Mm-hmm. Here's a bill that's going to take effect on such and such date, and you have to comply with it. Well, how do I do that? We're not sure yet.
We'll figure that out.
We'll figure it out, and then we'll tell you.
Yeah. But yet, with being an FFL holder, we have random ATF guys that show up and go through our books and make sure we are up to par and we're doing everything right. So it's not like you're not regulated and not checked on. We are.
Yeah.
So to have somebody that has no knowledge of anything, they're just given a position to come in and be able to enforce new mm-hmm. laws, jail time, closure on you, that's a scary thought.
Yeah.
Your employees have to be background checked once a year, have to be specifically trained every year. All of your ammunition has to be out of public accessibility, behind counters or in locked cases. The gun show side of things, what they've done in Colorado now, it'll get rid of gun shows. Mm-hmm. Literally, there will not be a gun show in 2 years. There will not be a gun show in the state of Colorado unless it's a antique firearm collectible type show because they cannot comply with what was imposed.
When you're saying all this stuff, too, is I'm thinking, like, okay, what if they switch that over and put all those weird, crazy regulations on, like, outfitters, guides to the point where they couldn't keep up then, too. So, like, an outfitter and guide guy can't keep an employee because we have to constantly go do this, but if we're doing this, we can't be in the field taking hunters out. So
that's exactly what they're trying to do.
Then eventually guides and outfitters don't even exist in the state of Colorado.
There was a question given to the Outfitters Association if they'd be willing to go underneath Colorado Parks and Wildlife as opposed to the Colorado Department of Regulatory Agencies. The outfitters said no. No.
Yeah.
You don't have the manpower. You don't have the brain power. You don't have the bandwidth to be able to turn around and do this. No. You can see what they want to do and how they want to do it at different levels of government, and it all has to do with taking consumptive users off of the landscape or taking the availability for that consumptive use to actually even be utilized.
Mm-hmm. Where are you at right now as far as like what's your primary message focus? What should people be most focused on in regards to how we can help and what we can do? And I mean, I know it sounds to me based on the fact that as this moves forward, it's like this, I envision it as like, I mean, we were just in New Zealand and we watched Lord of the Rings, you know, and I was thinking those big troll guys that are pushing those big giant towers, you know, those big ogre looking things. Yeah. And they've got those big 150 foot towers.
Well,
and
they're like pushing am I the ogre guy?
No, you're not the ogre, but I would say the antis are like constantly pushing this tower, right? They're just like always cranking and turning and pushing and pushing. So what are we ramping up for and funding, right? I mean, know we bring up funding and we talked a lot about funding prior to the 127 vote. And where now do we put that? What do we need funding for? What's the message? How can we help?
Well, and I appreciate you asking that because that's going to be an ongoing conversation, not just for Colorado, but New Mexico and Montana and eventually Nevada,
Utah.
You look what Arizona is having to do. Washington and Oregon, or as you would say, Washington. Whoa. It's Washington and Oregon.
It's like my mom. My mom's from Indiana. She still calls it a zinc instead of a sink.
Zinc?
A zinc, a zinc. She's calling
it
a hole.
Did she go down by the creek?
Yeah, the creek. Yeah, the zinc. She's like, put those dishes in the zinc.
But you add all that stuff together, and I think the biggest thing that I would do a call to action to people is realize that funding is something that should be part of the everyday scheme of what we're trying to accomplish. There was we're doing a raffle. SCI, the Colorado chapter of SCI, is doing a raffle. And the reason I bring it up, and we'll talk about it just, a little bit, and I'll give a plug for it, and if you guys will carry it and put our, the raffle ends, the online raffle ends June 12th. And so we're trying to do some proactive messaging between now and then. We've done social spots, but a couple guys have gotten on and said, well, this is only for the rich. And no, anybody that wins this won't be able to turn around and go where the good guys get to go to hunt. That's the mentality of our side.
We live in it. We swim in it. We hear it all the time.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, you know, if you want to win, you have to plan. For hunters, sportsmen and women, to be so enthusiastic about their endurance and longevity and stamina to be able to go out and pursue. And I would not want any of these guys that are naysayers on stuff that we've been fighting to be my hunting guide. Mm-hmm. You wake up in the middle of the morning, you know, the early morning, and the guy says, well, we haven't seen anything for 3 days. We're screwed. You might as well just go back to your camp. I don't want that guy.
No. Yeah.
You know, we heard that during the campaign. Well, sorry, but you guys are going to lose another one. Boy, I just won't hunt Colorado anymore.
Yeah, I'm thinking DMs I got that are exactly the same. It's pretty scary.
You know, and those are things that we heard from people. And I was just at the Rocky Mountain Bighorn Society banquet over the weekend, and the guys that came up and said, "Bo, I don't know how you pulled that off because I just knew you were going to lose." I'm thinking, you're a sheep hunter.
Sure.
You're never going to draw a tag.
Yeah.
But
here you are.
But here you are.
Right.
And if you can turn the table on some of this negativity, I think that, and I'm not trying to be an inspirational leader or a coach or, you know, I'm not Tony Robbins by any means. I'm the ogre, you know.
You're better than Tony Robbins. Yeah. Tony Robbins got nothing on you, Dan. He wished he was you.
Yeah, he wishes that he didn't live in Colorado, probably. But
you probably wish he's had his paycheck.
Yeah, I wouldn't be griping about and begging, borrowing, stealing for money.
But he probably wishes
I think that we have something before us still that sportsmen and women can capitalize on. You know, we were part of a $4.4 million positive campaign, and we fought almost $5.5 million in some capacity, not necessarily through Cats Aren't Trophies. Think about that $10 million combination that could have been put toward conservation, not toward public opinion,
fighting,
and flyers and advertisements and billboards and yard signs. And stop and think of that.
Yeah,
that's how much lunacy has actually become when it comes to this stuff. Is I don't like what you do, so I'm going to turn around and take it away. Mm-hmm. And no matter what it's going to cost, instead of trying to make it better, I'm going to turn around and make sure you can never do it again. Sportsmen and women have the opportunity before us to continue to set the tone and the narrative moving forward and make sure that 127 and what happened in Colorado last year was not an anomaly. If it's an anomaly, we will be the Cleveland Browns. If you want to see the bad things come to fruition, look at 2026 and you look and see what happens in Colorado. If we win, we set the tone and narrative for the next 4 to 8 years in Western politics when it comes to wildlife management. If we lose, better hang on to your bootstraps, boys. I guarantee that they're not going to just quit, because they will turn around and get what they want in Colorado, and they will move to the next susceptible state for the next susceptible method of take and the next susceptible species to be able to pursue. This is not over until they say it's over, or we say it's over.
You say if. I mean, I don't. If we win, if we lose, I just, as I think, we can't. We just can't lose.
Well, that's the thing.
We have to win this.
But see, they can always lose and generate more money because they've made a business out of it. We lose once, they're victors.
Right. We can't. We have to protect it.
I think Floyd Mayweather, you know, he's undefeated, even after all the stuff he's done, you know. But if he lost one,
sure.
If he just lost one,
his whole legacy.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's where we're at when it comes to conservation. Nobody thought that we were going to have a chance in hell when Governor Polis was elected governor in 2018, and we beat them at every single level through his commission appointments, through his directives to the legislature, through his vetoes, through whatever they've tried to culminate, whatever they've tried to support, whatever his first gentleman spouse has decided to do and engage in, even though he wasn't elected, they sure act like he was. We have beat them at every single level. If we lose the last year that they're there, what difference did it make for the first 7 years?
Yeah, we can.
Yeah.
No. And so funding, we got to have funding. And we need every single sportsman and woman to step up and help us out again. 82% of all of our funds last year were generated from non-residents.
Oh, wow.
82%.
Really? That's awesome.
Yeah.
I mean,
I love hearing that.
It's awesome, and it's not. Well, it's great that people have like a genuine concern, and that you know that they're willing to put their money where their mouth is in a state that they don't even live in. You know, mm-hmm. that's important to them to protect a resource that they enjoy.
You know, Trail. I think one of the biggest things is that and Mike Costello with Howell said this. How many people had a vested interest in Colorado? How many applied there, had hunted there previously, vacationed there, knew somebody there, mm-hmm. wanted to hunt there, had preference points there? They had a vested interest. You can't really do that to that scale, to that magnitude in Utah or into Arizona.
Nevada.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
there, states where your opportunities are more limited.
It's significantly limited mm-hmm. In comparison.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean it is, and I'm a broken record when it comes to Colorado. People that ask, they'll say, you know, what state is a state that if I wanted to explore hunting, I wanted to get into hunting. I mean, Colorado is often right near the tip top of the, you know, mm-hmm. the table as far as like a state, that because your resources are so incredible. I mean, you have an incredible elk herd and you know, incredible mule deer herd and other species. But then when you just drive through that state, you visit the state, just an incredible natural just the landscape incredible.
Yeah, the whole thing.
The whole thing as a whole. I mean, they use the term, you know, ecological, right? Their ecology or the ecosystem. You have an incredible ecosystem.
And it doesn't matter whether you're in the Eastern Plains.
No.
Or you go to the far western desert corners. Or you go to the high peaks, you go to the big valleys. Mm-hmm. That southeast Colorado Canyon country is remarkable. I mean, most people have no idea that stuff is even down there.
Yeah.
But we have such a diversified landscape, diversified wildlife. The biggest problem is that 4.9 of the 5.9 million people live within 25 miles east or west of the I-25 corridor.
Yep.
And they are detached to some degree. The majority of them are detached to some degree about what that state actually is mm-hmm. and the resources that mm-hmm. it actually has and how those resources have been appropriately managed.
Yeah. That's really incredible that you would receive that much support from non-residents. I think it's awesome. But then, you know, we can continue that, but then also hopefully improve the amount of just the education level of people that live in Colorado mm-hmm. so that we can continue to get more votes from people that actually live there.
Yeah.
And then also funding. Yeah. Funding.
I mean, you guys travel around, you mm-hmm. see, you see a lot of people, you were at different shows and stuff. It's humbling. And, I guess it's, I'm curious of the recognition that I've gotten mm-hmm. individually. Where I can't go down into an airport or mm-hmm. into a restaurant or into a hotel somewhere and somebody doesn't recognize me in some capacity. That mm-hmm. is not what I intended by any means. I mean, that actually is weird to the point mm-hmm. to where, you know, it's like, are you friendly or are you not?
Nor probably even a perk that you really, or I say perk, but it's probably not even something you ultimately care that much about. I don't get the feeling that you're like, you know, you're in it for the right reason, which is just mm-hmm. to protect your way of life and my way of life.
I mean, we were doing the Bighorn deal, and they gave us a booth, and they auctioned off another one of our blankets for a fundraiser. And the little gal that was helping me at the booth, she says, "Do you ever get tired of pictures and shaking hands?" And I'm like, you know, no, I don't. But it's not for me.
Not for you.
It's acknowledgement and recognition of somebody that got a chance to participate and do something on behalf of conservation and wildlife management mm-hmm. that they're appreciative.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, you get recognized, you know, people want to take pictures of both of you guys and, you know, but I was elevated individually and CRWM collectively to a level that we never ever expected. I mean, in 14, 15 months, you know, we went from nobody knew us unless you were in the state of Colorado and what we did to when I'm standing at somebody else's booth that's not even ours and people are standing in line wanting to turn around and talk to me in somebody else's booth. And that's weird.
Yeah, but it's a product of the passion that you exude. I mean, the first time I met you, I was like, oh, this is the guy. Like, this guy bleeds passion for the thing that I love. He embodies it completely. It's not a facade. It's not a fake. He's not doing it for any other reason than he just genuinely really loves the resource. And
like, I got a chip on my shoulder.
and a chip on your shoulder, which is great. You got to have one. You have to have thick skin, I'm sure. But yeah, I think it's... I think you're the right guy for the job at the right time. I've always thought that since the first time I met you. But go back to you. I don't know that you did. We finish the raffle. I wanted to make sure that you finished it so that we can get people.
So I'll give you guys the plugs on it. So last year we did a Safari Club International did a big raffle for us, and this year we've got an elk hunt that's by Sangre de Cristo Outfitters. It takes 22 preference points to draw this. But you get the voucher and the 5-day guided hunt on one of the ranching for wildlife properties in the state of Colorado. 22 points to normally draw it. I mean, if you're just starting into the draw, you're never going to hunt this property.
Yeah, you
And we've got another bigger one coming up later in the year. But this is the tickets are $50 a piece, 3 for $100. It's with Sangre de Cristo. It's on the Mountain Meadows Upper Ranch. The deadline is July 12th of this year. And at the same time, we've got a Gunworks rifle, a 7mm PRC that's donated by Gunworks, and the Salida Gun Shop again. And, you know, what's remarkable is Salida Gun Shop has not only stepped up to be a supporter and a sponsor of what we're doing and helping us out with our podcast that we started out the first of the year. They're under the gun, no pun intended. I mean, they're under attack.
Yeah.
And they're still willing to support the conservation side of things. Beyond anybody's belief of what a small gun shop should be able to do. They shouldn't be carrying the brunt of what we're doing, but they're willing to step up through Swarovski and through Gunworks. But the Gunworks gun and the elk hunt both close online June 12th. Drawing is June 14th. And, it's $50 a ticket, 3 for $100, and you can go to sciColorado.org, or you can go to SaveTheHuntColorado.com, which is the CRWM website. And those are chances for somebody to actually participate in some really high-end ticket type stuff, and to be able to provide to the cause, to be able to provide to the fight. We just need some continued help.
Yeah.
And it's not, and we're not singular. We're not the ones that are just cast aside, and we're not the only ones. But it's a mechanism that somebody can actually engage, and we would appreciate it if anybody would take the time or to share that around. Because without the continued funding, states like Colorado and New Mexico and other ones will likely fall and fail.
$100
Three tickets for $100
Okay, and then all that money goes back into...
Every single dollar goes back into CRWM, the fight that we did. Keep in mind, we spent $50,000+ in 5 months at the legislature just on lobbying. When you don't have money coming in after you just won a $4.4 million ballot initiative, I mean, this money does not just flow. We don't have product. We got stuff on the shopping cart with some T-shirts and some hats and some swag, and we do okay with it.
Yeah, but it's not a guaranteed.
It pays for accounting. Yeah. It pays for monthly accounting services of what it pays for. And so anybody that's willing to participate, and we're still taking donations, you know, every once in a while, Ron, our secretary treasurer, will come up and text her something or email or something.
We got the $1,000 one just out of the blue from a gentleman.
Really?
So that makes it nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's also nice too when it's on the back end of, you know, there's not nearly, I mean, this is kind of the first we've ever talked about this 82 and kind of what might come in 26, right? And I assume as we get closer to that, we'll probably see a lot more, you know, messaging and probably a lot more output. You'll be on the road, I'm sure. Are you tired yet thinking about it?
I'm almost dying here at night in the hotel because it's dark and quiet, you know.
Relax.
Yeah. I was in Bozeman on Newberg's. Monday, and I did some other stuff in Bozeman on Tuesday and Wednesday. Then I had the RMBS banquet on Friday and Saturday, a 2-day deal. And then I met her at the hotel in Colorado Springs, and at midnight, and we flew out at 6 on Sunday morning, and then got here and taking the generosity that you guys are continuing to give us.
That's a pace you're setting.
I think I said in one of their podcasts, we need to clone you. we have multiple candidates out there.
The anti's would disagree. Yeah, there is a bobblehead of me out there.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
it's really good.
Yeah, I want that
has
collectible.
Has the claw and everything.
Yeah,
gosh. It's a bobblehead. Then you know we got the the stupid shirts and the hats with my face on them.
Mm-hmm. Well, you were talking about people recognize you everywhere. I think we were driving yesterday, or maybe it was after I dropped you off. Like, my girlfriend had asked, like, "Oh, what are you podcasting with?" And I was like, "Dan Gay." She's like, "That the bearded guy with the bear claw." It's like, even she knows about you from all the talks we do and podcasts. Like, so you're recognized by someone who doesn't even hunt at all.
No,
so.
That's funny, and we appreciate the support with everybody, and you know, somebody's got to be at the front of the line on this stuff. It would just be nice if the sportsman community as a whole would show as much enthusiasm as some individuals from some states. New Mexico guys have reached out and they want to turn around and figure out some way to emulate or duplicate what we've done with CRWM. Mm-hmm. Some guys in Arizona have done the same thing. Some guys in Idaho have done the same thing. Some guys in Nevada have done the same thing. North Dakota.
Yeah, I had a guy from Missouri reach out when this all was happening, and they've been like, "We want to try to implement the same playbook in Missouri to make sure stuff like this doesn't happen."
And the best way to do that, and we're just brainstorming here, but the best way to do that, in my mind, is to capitalize on the resources that have been given to us. The podcast that we started, we didn't do it so I could turn around and get on and just talk about stuff. But, you know, I talk enough as it is. But looking at the followers that we gained through social media over the 15 months, well, keep in mind, we didn't have social media. Mm-hmm. We didn't have a podcast. I never listened to a podcast. I didn't know what a podcast was. I thought it was like some farm planting deal or something. I didn't know, you know. And when that stuff was given to us, We contemplated some things, and then Bobby Marshall with the Mountainside podcast, and Bobby's just a badass. Mm-hmm. Anybody that's not watched his stuff, they need to, because he's got some fabulous guests. But he said, "You ought to do a podcast." And I'm thinking, I don't want to do a podcast. I was on 86 podcasts last year of everybody else's.
I kind of have my own already.
you know, and why do I need one when everybody else is being so generous?
Yeah.
Well, Sean Ender with Peak to Creek Productions, our cinematographer, we put our heads together, and on January 1st, first week of January, we put a podcast together with Bobby Marshall's studio and accoutrements and accessories. And I think when we said that at the end of December, people thought I was going to be sitting in my underwear in a dark closet with an incandescent light bulb doing a podcast.
And that I would watch.
Well, that's what the Antis did during the campaign, you remember. You know, they had stick figures of me, and you know, they were doing all sorts of stuff in their pajamas. But when we did that, we did it because I don't have the brain power, or the bandwidth, the intestinal fortitude, or the finances to rebuild up what we built up during 127. Mm-hmm. We have to keep it. Mm-hmm. And that was a form that we figured that maybe we could do. And what's interesting is we've gotten some acknowledgments off a couple of the platforms that through the first 20 episodes of the podcast, and I think today we just launched number 31, but for the first 20, we were like 531% above the average 20th episode of a new podcast. Mm-hmm. Well, it's either all the antis that are watching to see what the dumb knuckle dragon Neanderthal is saying, or our side is actually starting to pay attention. Mm-hmm. And as much traveling as what I'm doing, I can't say, I mean, I was at a restaurant in Bozeman, and a guy walks up and he said, "Are you Dan Gates?" And I said, "Yeah."
Yeah.
And of course, I'm taking the defensive pose.
Yeah.
You know, and he goes, "I watch your podcast." And I'm like, "Really? Why?"
So, I think more people are paying attention to this type of stuff. I know that I never would have thought that we would start getting messages where they say, "Oh, you guys need to talk about this issue or that issue in this state or that state." And I mean, I'm by no means qualified in most regards to talk about a lot of like, you know, it's just not been in my wheelhouse. It's never been where my focus is. And so there's been some reluctancy on my part because I don't live and breathe that like I probably should or need to, but I can talk gear and tactics all day. Right. Mm-hmm. The things that we love to like go out and do, but I've been surprised that the number of people that have reached out to us and say, "Hey, where are you at on this issue? Where are you at on that issue? You guys need to talk about this or talk about that." And so people are definitely paying attention, like more people than than ever before.
Yeah. And one thing I would say is, and it's great to see this sort of cross-pollination from the community about different subject matter. And the criticism that I have, and it's not anybody in specific, but it's easy to become a keyboard warrior or a cell phone guru and turn around and post something. But you have to make sure that your facts or in line, and the message is in line. Mm-hmm. And so the thing that I would encourage people to do before they share stuff and before they just turn around and spout off stuff on their own is to pay attention to some of the experts that are actually talking about some stuff. We did a little bit of a clip on our social media spot. You know, I run the monthly Colorado Legislative Sportsman's Caucus, and I'm the MC along with Barry Snell with CSF. And Ryan Bronson last week from Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation did a pretty good spot on this public lands issue. And Ryan broke it down as far as total numbers of acres and where this would go and what this would do, as opposed to saying 1.5 million acres mm-hmm. or 370,000 mm-hmm. acres or whatever. There's a lot of land swap type stuff that is in there to get rid of some checkerboard effect. Now, I'm not saying that it's all a good deal, mm-hmm. but what happens is misinformation, not lies and deceit, but misinformation then turns around and expands into additional misinformation. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And pretty soon somebody starts talking about something, and I don't care whether it's about gun rights or it's about wildlife management. It becomes more convoluted, and now you have to bring the reins back in. That's why we were so successful on 127, mm-hmm. is we brought the reins in before. I mean, I would, like I say, I would turn around and call people out of state and say, no. Well, that's what I heard. You're wrong. Mm-hmm. We're the ones running the campaign. We know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so when people get a chance to participate, we have the power of this that will expand messages so expeditiously and so professionally. We just need to make sure that we take the facts from the factual sources
yeah. mm-hmm.
and then compile that to our own benefit. And that way we don't get misguided and have yeah. misinformation.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good advice.
And so, I mean, we just appreciate everything that part of the playbook and roadmap, groups and individuals like you and Go Hunt and Lorenzo allowing us to be able to turn around and ride the coattails off of you guys. You know, Randy Newbergs, the Ranellas, the Clay Newcombs, the Cable Smiths, the Sloan Browns, mm-hmm. The Robbie Dennings, the Howl for Wildlife. I mean, this was a collective movement, but it's part of the playbook.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that once people recognize that to emulate that, we can't stay in our silos. We have to make sure that we are in the arena together, and because the antis are.
Yeah.
They're all against us. We just need to make sure that we're not against each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. So buy raffle tickets.
Buy raffle tickets.
June 12th.
June 12th is the deadline.
Okay. And then I would assume as this progresses, you'll have more info as it rolls downhill. And, you know, maybe we can get you back again. We can talk more about that. And then more funding opportunities, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then just for shits and giggles, if you don't mind, she's just telling me she's my... this personal assistant. If anybody cares, you know, Cameron Haynes and a bunch of guys came and supported us last year for Outdoorsman Days.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a third annual Outdoorsman Days. It's August 8th and 9th in Florence, Colorado.
Okay.
We got Fred Eichler. We got Jermaine Hodge. We got Heidi Stout. We've got Jake Bull from New England Naturals coming in. We got about 15, 18 pretty good sized names coming in. And it's a 2-day event. It's not just a fundraiser, but it's an outdoor festival that we created.
Community event.
Yeah. Last year we had 4,600 people, sportsmen and women, that turned around and came. But it's Outdoorsman Days, August 8th and 9th, and you can go to ColoradoOutdoorsmansDays.com. And then you can get additional information off SaveTheHuntColorado.com as well.
We have vendor spaces available, awesome. And we also have sponsorships available. So if you're interested...
Yeah, maybe we'll try to make a trip out.
I would love to.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
August 8th and 9th.
August 8th and 9th. Yeah.
We have old style chuck wagons that come and set up for our dinner on Friday night. That is absolutely awesome to see.
Got live music. We got mm-hmm. seminars and vendors. Last year it was Colorado Parks and Wildlife's largest hunter education class that they did in the state. They ran about 120 kids.
Yes. That's cool.
Really unique. Yeah. So that's a plug for the organization that we do, but. You said community,
yeah.
But sportsmen as a whole need to turn around and support the community side of things. And I don't care whether you're BHA or TRCP or RNF or whatever.
I mean, sportsmen as a community.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very much so. Yeah. Very much so. And the other piece of advice I would say is make sure that you pay attention to the politics that's going on that you can actually be a participant of.
Mm-hmm.
And through this entire campaign last year, you know, people said, what can we do? Vote.
Yeah, local elections, right?
And know who you're voting for, and know who you're registered, who you're registered as, and where you. I mean, you know what's really bad is somebody that turns around and wants to sign a petition, and this goes for the antis as well. That you know, that if they're wanting to do politics and voter privilege is right, correct? Mm-hmm. When you change your voter registration, that allows you to sign petitions. But if you're signing a petition to, for signatures and you didn't change your voter registration, it's null and void.
Really?
Mm-hmm. You have to stay up to date. Voting is a privilege and a right, but it's not a right if you don't exercise the privilege.
Gotcha. Earlier you said, I don't know, sorry we're running long, but you'd mentioned a new gubernatorial election approaching, and you said that you had some potential candidates
mm-hmm.
that reached out and said, hey, maybe we should have a conversation. Do you have a gauge on, I don't know, I was thinking about it as you were talking. I mean, the presidential election that just passed, I think if you looked at the map across the country, you could see that there were some areas that changed pretty hard. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like there were major parts of California that went a direction that historically they maybe haven't. Do you think there's a feasibility? Is there a possibility that in Colorado, like we get the right person elected in is a new governor and that we can kind of take a new direction? Is there a flip in Colorado that could happen?
I think there's things that have happened in Colorado. And if you looked at the voter results on 127 as an example,
right,
there's a few counties that we still lost, but we flipped by 15 or 18 points over the over the 2020 election just on Proposition 127.
Yeah.
Those are significant numbers, especially in that demographical area, that geographical area that we're talking about. There's some candidates on both sides of the aisle, Republican and Democrat, that are going to look to try to capitalize on the momentum of what the agriculture and the sportsman community have given. Now, people need to understand, it's not so much that they're worried about agriculture and sportsmen and themselves. They're worried about the voter.
Yeah, where the vote came from.
Exactly. Yeah, and that was not all sportsmen. That was not all ag. Those were people that were supportive or favored toward those conversations. And so anybody that thinks that the next gubernatorial election or the next Senate or representative election in the state is not going to play back on what happened in 2024, I think they're uneducated. Mm-hmm. And so what we're hoping to do is create a mechanism, a conduit, that the sportsman community can get involved in significantly during the 2026 gubernatorial campaign.
Yeah.
And that would be early next year. And that's something that sportsmen and women typically haven't done, is to play in politics.
Right.
The things that I would really say to people, though, not just fundraising for CRWM or any other organization that's conservation-minded, there's a lot of elections that are won on dollars and cents, and candidate elections are won on dollars and cents as well. And if somebody wants to kick in $25 to a particular candidate, by all means, do so. If they want to kick in $300, if you want to do the maximum of what you can, depending on what your state is, the antis do that. The extremists do that. The left does that. The right does that. It's just that sportsmen and women and agriculture people, hardworking, grassroots, blue-collar workers, have not typically supported campaigns for candidates. We just got into the mode where we're getting them to support campaigns for issues.
Yeah, we fight it on the back end.
Financing and funding is imperative, and if you find that you don't like what's happening in your state, the best way to do that is to vote. But it doesn't matter what your vote is if he doesn't have the money to turn around and get enough people to turn around and come out and vote. You heard those statistics from the last election, I think even in 2020. X amount of people that are gun-toting, Second Amendment-type people didn't vote.
Yeah.
But they're the first ones to turn around and gripe about how elections turned out. Yeah. Now, I don't know the specific numbers on that stuff, but I can tell you that if they're anywhere close to being factual, and you have a presidential election or a gubernatorial election that has 2 or 3 or 4 percentage points difference, and you're told that 5% of the general population doesn't vote,
yeah,
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 we have to pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the most empowering things that we saw through this entire process are the young women that have come out of the woodwork, that are your customers, that are our supporters, and you can look at social media, and it's not anything that we ever planned on, but some fantastic young women from around the country, and that is the target audience. They might hunt, they might not hunt. A lot of their followers might hunt and not hunt. But when you have 15 or 20 or 30 young, educated sports women that have millions of followers that are listening to what they say and how they say it because they're worried about their kids,
mm-hmm.
they're worried about equity, diversity, and inclusivity, and wokeism, and transgenderism, and how their kids are taught and what they're going to eat and how they're going to be able to live and what they can turn around and do religiously. Mm-hmm. They care about what people think. And it's not coming from a knuckle-dragging Neanderthal like me. Mm-hmm. It's coming from young women that are going to change the makeup of our Colorado voter system and the Western United States voter system. And I'm not so sure that it's not going to change how a lot of these other components around the country work out.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating deal, but it's something to where we explored organically and holistically through our campaign.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you what, people don't pay attention to it. They better, because that's going to change a lot of elections coming up. A lot.
And the first question they ask, what do you want me to do? Where do you want me to be?
Mm.
And they show up, they help, they participate.
Yeah,
they're doing stuff that beyond things that I never ever.
And a lot of them are moms.
Yeah, anybody that's married or has a significant mm-hmm. other in their life knows that they keep the glue together.
Yes.
Yeah. They're the glue that keeps things moving. Yeah. For sure.
I think that that's, you know, product industry leaders, I mean, should be able to capitalize on some of that as well.
Yeah.
But when you start talking the political side of it,
yeah.
and mm-hmm. what value there is in that. That's a whole story in itself. It'd be great to get some of these other gals mm-hmm. involved.
Yeah, yeah. That's mm-hmm. interesting. I like that idea. Maybe we could explore it. Yeah.
I'd like to get you guys on our podcast.
Anytime. I don't know what we have to offer, but we can ramble.
We can talk about product.
If you want to dive into draws and...
Can you tell me how rain gear works?
Yeah, I can tell you. I can tell you all kinds of things when it comes to that stuff. Now, I appreciate you guys coming on. I'm always... I will say every time you're here, it just leaves me with it's twofold. I always feel like I have a better understanding of what's ahead. It's a little bit overwhelming,
mm-hmm.
but it's also, I always feel optimistic as well, I should say.
You don't want to slit your wrist when we walk out.
No, never.
I always burn the tape.
No, I actually always feel enthused, you know.
Yeah,
I
feel, do more things.
I feel enthusiastic about it. It makes me want to pay more attention. It makes me want to be more involved in the things that probably actually matter.
Mm-hmm.
It also makes me genuinely feel more unified, because I we'll get critiques or criticisms, and it's okay. Some of them are warranted, some of them probably aren't. Some are from just keyboard warriors, you know.
Yeah,
it's hard not to dive down rabbit holes and read comments and reply to people and, you know, have some difficult conversations that might critique you. But generally, yeah, I always feel more united. You know, I get a chance to talk to you, and we talk about subject matter as a whole. Because really, I mean, that's it. We're all kind of love the thing for the reason that we love it, which is to be outdoors. And, you know, we want to see sound wildlife management. We want to see hunting as a tradition and, you know, as a ecological means of managing resources. We want to see that continue. I just think sometimes it's easy to divide. And mm-hmm. I always feel more unified after I get a chance to talk to somebody mm-hmm. like yourself, you know.
Thanks.
You kind of see past the bullshit. You know, the day-to-day stuff of I'm a bow hunter, or, you know, you're a rifle hunter, or...
I'm a tar hunter.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So now I always feel enthusiastic. I always feel optimistic. I always feel, you know, hopeful. And I think if anything, you've shown that, you know, with some leadership and some enthusiasm and some sweat and blood and tears, you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I said it earlier, we have to do it. I keep going back to that. You say, if we win, if we lose, back in my mind, I just keep thinking, we can't.
No.
We can't lose. We just can't do it. So whatever it is that we got to try to win, we just have to win.
And that's the thing that Karen and I have tried to do is, and we talk about it frequently, and I think I said this before, but, you know, we're out here on our anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a couple other meetings and stuff, and I've been gone the better part of the month, and without her, we wouldn't be able to continue to do what we do.
Mm-hmm.
Without her, and this is with any good couple in business or lifestyle or whatever. Without your better half, you wouldn't be able to do what you do, to be able to turn around and do things on behalf of other people.
Mm-hmm.
We're not doing this for ourselves. We're doing it because we really believe it's the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. Now, our enemies would think contrary to that. But you have to have a team, and the team starts underneath the first household, the roof, and then it expands out.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now it's a couple, and then it goes into a family, then it goes into a business, then that mm-hmm. goes into an organization, and then a board. And then it goes into a coalition and an alliance, and then it goes from there to the community, and then it goes from there to, you know, a spider web network out. If you don't have a core group, right now it's me and her, the mm-hmm. core group, but it goes out from there.
Mm-hmm.
Randy Newberg said something that, and you know, you think about it, but he said something last week. If there's not a Dan Gates, who is there? Hmm. I believe that there's other people out there to turn around and do it. It's just right now they don't have to, because we're willing to. But we need everybody's support to be able to do it, because without our core here and without that outer circle of that spider web effect, we don't have a network.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have cross-pollination.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have community. I mean, you know, we talk about the public lands issues, and not to belabor the conversation, but I care about public lands significantly.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're not going to be able to hunt it, I'm not going to fight near as much for it, because I got other agendas in my head because of self-sustainability and perpetuation of wildlife management and stuff. If we're not going to have it like that, is that the public lands that I want to turn around and fight for? Probably not.
Mm-hmm.
But the bad part about that is, who the hell else is going to? Because it's not been the mountain bikers. It's not been the backpackers. It's not been the campers. It's not been the cross-country skiers. It's not been the rock climbers. I'm not saying that they're not of value to the economy, but they don't provide the value to public lands of what conservation-minded, license-buying sportsmen and women do.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have the core group to be able to expand that cross-pollination, I don't think that the majority of the 11 or 13, 14 million sportsmen and women in the United States are willing to support public land conservation efforts if they can't utilize them and there's no game on them to be able to pursue.
Mm-hmm.
The core group of what we have is what we have, and we have to figure out a way to expand that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said.
And I think you have to keep in mind the young boys and girls that stand in line with a shirt or a hat and want to have his signature or want to shake his hand.
Yeah.
And they're 6, 7, 8, awesome. 10 years old. Yeah. That's who you're doing it for, because that's the generation coming
mm-hmm,
up.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there's many. I've seen it when I've done shows with them. It's amazing yeah. that mm-hmm. they're that intrigued in what he's doing and who he is and what the cause is.
Mm-hmm.
So
I'm the bearded Tony Robbins.
I'll say it again. Tony Robbins got nothing on you, Dan. nothing on you.
No offense, Tony.
He wishes he was you. So we appreciate you coming on. We'll keep an eye on this 82, and then I would just encourage people show up and, you know, buy raffle tickets.
Mm-hmm.
Donate when you can, and sounds like we will all gear up for a pretty eventful 2026.
Yeah, you see yes. our stuff on social media, Instagram, Facebook, yeah. share it, comment yes. on it, share it, expand it out.
And give us a plug for your podcast, where they can find
it. Through the gates to save the hunt. It's on any of the social setups, the platforms, but it's on YouTube as well. So if you don't want to just listen, you can watch. But it's not me in a closet. But Bobby did a really badass job with it and helping us out. And then Sean's done a fabulous job. And the guests that we've got, we've got some badass guests.
Awesome.
And so we're starting to follow in the footsteps of guys like you and some of the others. But some of our subject matter is not as fun. We're not talking about
not as dumbed down.
Yeah. We're not talking about yeah. bullet coefficients.
You don't have an episode called Boys Are Buzzing.
No, you can't do it all. There's two particular episodes, and one's coming out next week. But the two that I would encourage anybody to look at if they're just looking to get a flavor are the two that we've got with Martin Lowney, the former USDA Wildlife Services APHIS Colorado State Director. He was in the agency for 37 years, You want to talk about how government politics works?
Wow.
And when it comes to wildlife management, Martin is a wizard when it comes to that. He's very intellectual. But those are two that I would say, if you got an interest in any of this and you want to see if you want what we've got to offer on our podcast, listen to what Martin Lonnie says.
Okay.
He's got a great accent, too.
Oh, yeah?
He's from...
New York.
Oh, yes.
Right on.
It's great. Awesome.
Yeah. I'll make sure we get those out there on the Go Hunt social when we do the podcast. We'll kick over a link to you, both those episodes.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. I've got a 2.5 hour drive home, so I know what I'm listening to. Yeah.
No, we just appreciate the generosity and your guys' friendship because it's you end up in places that you didn't expect. But you also network people you didn't expect as well. So we sure appreciate your friendship.
Yeah, likewise, we appreciate everything that you do. And we have an open door policy here with you guys. If you ever want to pop
Thank
you. Cool.
Yeah, if we can do anything to help you all, I'm more than happy to.
You got a spare room at my house. In the neighborhood.
Yeah. Thanks. Enjoy your anniversary and congratulations.
Thank
you.
Yeah,
appreciate it.
Hope you have a good weekend and hopefully we can continue to be a part of what you're doing and be a support.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks.